We're holding on Kuf Gimel Amud Beis, seven lines from the bottom. The last thing we learned yesterday was about Micha, the one of Pesel Micha. Why is he not listed among the people who lost their place in Olam Haba, considering that he was making his idol was Chotu Machias Rabin? So we said that we got to that actually by way of asking why is Yehoyakim not mentioned, where we learned yesterday that Yehoyakim, the third to last king of Malchus Yehuda, was an outstanding Rosha. And we said that, Rabbi Bar Mori was asked about that, and he said, I don't know as far as Yehoyakim, the Gemara will take that up again later, but I can tell you something similar as far as Micha, why he's not listed, and the answer is because he was a big Baal Tzedakah, Pitei Mitzuya L'Ovre Drachim, his bread was always available for wayfarers. So therefore, either that means that in the course of that, he wasn't listed in order not to publicly shame him, even though in fact he did lose his place in Abba, that's how the Yad Ramah learned, or that it means that in fact, because of that, he was in fact exempted from this, and he did get a place in Olam Haba because sometimes the fact that Pitei Mitzuya L'Ovre Drachim would mean that sometimes therefore a Talmid Chacham would benefit from his property, from his whatever, and then he would share in that person's chosim in the future. So the Gemara continues on this as far as Micha. A pasuk says, "Va'over by Yom Tzara, the Tzara passes through the Yam. The Hika by Yom Galim, and Hashem struck the sea and it made waves." So Amar Rav Yechonan Zeh Pislei Shel Micha. That pasuk is referring to the idol of Micha, that when they crossed the Yam Suf and the Tzara was with there, the Tzara was with them, the Pesel Micha. Now Rashi gives two explanations. One is the first explanation is we don't mean the actual idol yet. What we mean is though that Moshe had with him the name of Hashem that he had written on something to bring up Yosef's coffin. We know Yosef's coffin, the Gemara tells us in Sota, according to one opinion, was at the bottom of the Nile, the Mitzrayim put it there so the Jews won't find it and be able to leave Mitzrayim, and so Moshe took a piece of something and wrote the name of Hashem on it, and he threw it into the water, and Yosef's coffin floated up. So now, Micha found this thing and took it along with him secretly. And now later on he used that to make his pestle. The second explanation, Rashi says that it means the actual pestle was already made at that point.
By the eagle,
that's right. Rashi says, you're right, I misread it. Rashi says that they used it by the eagle, right, that's how an eagle came out, is because, so according to the first explanation then, when we say that a tzara went with them, means this name that later on was used to create the eagle, and according to the second one, it means the actual idol of Micha that's described in Sefer Shoftim. So that went through when they were crossing through the sea and when Hashem was making waves in the sea and causing the sea to split. In fact, there are other places where it talks about the idea. We see the tremendous patience and chesed that the Eibishter did for the Jewish people. According to either opinion over here, it comes out, they're carrying with them the seeds of Avodah Zarah when they're crossing the Yam Suf, and so Hashem split the Yam Suf for them. Tanya, we learn in a brisa, Rab Nosson Omer, Migorov L'Shiloh Gimel Milin. From Gorov, which is where Micha lived, until Shiloh is 3 mil, V'hoya Ashan HaMarocha V'Ashan Pesel Micha Mis'arvin Zeh B'Zeh. The smoke from the Mishkan in Shiloh and the smoke from the Korbanos that were being brought to Micha's idol, Mis'arvin Zeh B'Zeh, are getting mixed up with each other because they're so close that you would have the columns of smoke would sometimes mix. Dikra Malachi HaShodos, the Malachi HaShodos wanted to push Micha away. It can mean to push him away in this world and kill him. It can mean push him away in Olam Haba. Marshall says actually what it means is to push away the smoke. They wanted to at least say, why should these two smokes be mixing? But Hashem says to them, "Hanichu lo, leave him alone, because shapitim mitzuya lo over drachim, because his bread is available for wayfarers." In other words, like we said before, he has that schus of being machnas orach, and therefore, for that, he's going to be saved from punishment. However, however, the people of Pelegish Begiva were punished regarding this matter. When they went to war regarding the whole story of Pelegish Begiva, the first two that the Psukim described in Sefer Shoftim, the first 2 days, the other Shvatim who were fighting against Shevet Binyamin lost 40,000 soldiers. So why? I mean, on the face of it, they're going l'shem shamayim to deal with a horrible crime and make sure that such a thing is never again done among the Jewish people. But Amar Lahem HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but Hashem is saying to them, b'chavodi le'michisem, you weren't moicha, you didn't protest about my kavod all this time. You have micha's idol and you're not doing anything about that. B'chavod akvodish abosav adam michisem, but you're all of a sudden being moicha about the fact that an individual yid, this Pelegish, was wronged. It's true, you have good reason to be offended about what happened to her. It's a terrible thing, but you should at least show the same concern for the covenant of Hashem, which is being desecrated over and over by Micha and his idol. The Gemara continues. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Meshum Rabbi Yosi ben Kisma. Here's more we have about the importance of giving food to another person. Amar Rabbi Yechem, Meshum Rabbi Yosi ben Kisma, Gdoila Legima, giving food to a guest is so great. Sheyuchika Shtei Mishpachas Yisrael. We see that because of a lack of doing that, two families were kept out of the Jewish people. Amun and Moav. Shenema, as the pasuk says, "Al dvar asher lakid mu'eschem ba'lechem v'mayim." Why are they not allowed to intermarry into the Jewish people, or at least their men are not allowed to, because they didn't welcome you when you were passing through them, when you Jewish people were passing near their lands, they didn't welcome you with bread and water. And therefore, because of that, the men of those families are never allowed to intermarry. The males throughout the generations of those families are never allowed to intermarry into the Jewish people. Maharsha discusses over here actually the point that Ramban explains on the Pasuk that actually the Yasher LeKidmu is actually referring only to Ammon. With Moav, it's a different thing. The fact that Moav hired Bilam to curse the Jewish people. But Maharsha says, based on all Gemara over here, it seems that the Gemara seems to be saying that with both of them, it's the fact that they didn't bring food and water. And in addition, with Moav, there's also the fact that they hired Bilam, etc. So in the case of Moav, at least it's both. Ben Yoyada talks about over here, actually, the point is that the two things are kind of interrelated. If they're thinking, well, maybe we don't need to give food to the Jewish people because after all, Hashem is providing for them with mon and everything. Well, then what makes them, then what makes them go and then why are they going? Actually, the Aruch HaNer explains this rather. Then in that case, then if they realize that Hashem is running everything for the Jewish people and giving them mon and everything, then why are they thinking to hire Bilam to curse them? So therefore, it's like the two things sort of fit together. If they realize truly that so it's one way or the other. In other words, if they're not giving them food because they're stingy, then that's a big problem in itself. And if they're not giving because they're saying, listen, they have mon, we don't need to give them anything, then what are you hiring Bilam to curse them? The Gemara continues. Rabbi Yochanan didei Omar. Now, Rabbi Yochanan quoted that statement in the name of Rabbi Yosi ben Kisma. Rabbi Yochanan himself goes further. Omar, he says, marchekas hakrovim, giving or not giving food to another person causes people who otherwise should be close to become distant. Umakarevas hasarachokim, on the other hand, it brings people who would have been far away, it brings them closer, as the Gemara is going to explain what all these mean. Umalemas einayim min arshayim, it causes Hashem to, so to speak, overlook and ignore bad things that Rishoyim do. Umashra Shechina al Navi HaBaal, it causes that even a Navi of Baal, even a false Navi, is able to have the Shechina rest on him. V'shigigasa Oyla Zodin, and failure to do it, even V'shigig, counts as bad as if it was done b'mezid. So what does he mean by that? The Gemara says, Marchekas Zakrevim, that it distances those who otherwise would be close. May Amun and Moav, we learn that from the story of Amun and Moav. Again, that Amun and Moav are called Krevim in the sense they're related to us Jewish people. They come from Loit, Abraham's nephew. But nevertheless, because they failed to give food to the Jewish people, then therefore now they're distanced and they're not allowed to intermarry into the Jewish people. Rashi's second explanation, actually, we'll talk about, Rashi gives a second explanation, but we'll talk about after we talk about Mekarevus HaSarachoykim, where the Gemara continues, Mekarevus HaSarachoykim, it brings close those who would have been further away. That means me Yisrei. We learn that from the story of Yisrei, who was from Midian. The Amr of Yechanan, the schar kib en loy v'yoychal lochem, in the schar of the fact that Yisrei says to his daughters, bring in the stranger who just saved you by the well, and let, invite him in and let him eat bread, in the schus of that, zochu b'nei bonav v'yoshu v'lishkas agazis. He had the schus that his descendants were among the members of the Sanhedrin who sat in lishkas agazis. So we see, in other words, that giving them food brought about that great thing. So Rashi's first explanation again is that Ammon and Moav were Krovim in the sense they descended from Lot. But then Rashi says, wait a minute, then in that case, Midian is even closer. Lot is only a nephew of Avraham. Midian comes from Bnei Keturah, who's an actual son of Avraham through Keturah. So what do you mean Krovim and Rechoikim? Rather, Rashi says, no, it means physically, it means geographically close and distant. Ammon and Moav are right next to Eretz Yisrael. Midian is further away. So Ammon and Moav, who are the next door neighbors of Eretz Yisrael, and you would think they should have the ability to when they're in this Gaia to join the Jewish people, but we're saying no, they're barred. As opposed to Midian, who's further away. Here we have that in the course of this. First of all, they were never barred from the Jewish people in the first place. But second of all, you have that Yisrael actually made himself and his family very close by offering Moshe hospitality. Marshall also adds the point later on Daf Kuf Vav. We're going to talk about that Yisrael was zeicha to this because he protested when Pare wants to enslave the Jewish people and throw the baby boys in the Nile, etc. Then Yisrael protested against that, and for that he has the schus to join the Jewish people. Marshall says it's both. You needed a schus of his that he should be able to join the Jewish people, and then once that happens, then you need another schus that his descendants should be able to become members of the Sanhedrin. But one depends on the other. If his children weren't able to join the Jewish people, they wouldn't be able to marry, they wouldn't be able to be members of the Sanhedrin either. So Or Gemara is mentioning the second point, and they are further on, it mentions the first one. So where do we know that his descendants were members of the Sanhedrin? Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, in Divrei Yomim, umimishpachos Sofrim Yoshve Yabetz, among the families of Sofrim, which means Tamar Chachamim, umishpachos is actually how it says in the Pasuk anyway, umishpachos Sofrim, the families of the Sofrim, the Tamar Chachamim, Yoshve Yabetz, who lived in or by Yabetz. Mephoshim on the Pasuk say, on the simple meaning, Yabetz is the name of a place, but the Gemara elsewhere explains that actually it's another name for Asni ben Knaz, so it means they were sitting with him as they were his Talmidim. Tir Osim, Shim Osim, Suchosim, these are the names of the families, and they also represent what they accomplished. Tir Osim is Moloshin Tra, which means a gate, which means they were the ones who were sitting by the gates as Dayonim. Shim Osim, that they heard. Rashi actually explains elsewhere. Tir Osim means they heard the Trua by Har Sinai. Shim Osim means that they heard, that Rashi explains over here. Shim Osim means they listened to the mitzvah of their father. Well, Rashi says over there, actually, that it means they listened to the mitzvah of their ancestor, as we're going to, there was a, later on, there was a descendant of Yisrael mentioned in Sefer Melachim and in Yirmiyah named Yonadab ben Rechav. And at one point, he tells his descendants that you should never drink wine, never live in permanent houses, never have fields and vineyards, act as though you're temporary guests in Hashem's world, and that way you won't come to Averis when everybody around you is starting to do Averis. And then even 200 years after Yonadab ben Rechav's times, Yirmiyah finds that they're still very loyal and faithful to that. He offers them wine, and they tell him we can't have because Yonadab ben Rechav told us. So therefore, they're called Shim Osim because Rashi explains in Sota, because they listened to what their father, to what their ancestor Yonadab and Rechav told them. Suchosim is they're called because they were living in sukkahs. Because again, Yonadab and Rechav told them to never live in permanent houses. So therefore they're described in the pasuk with these three names: Tir Osim, Shim Osim, Suchosim. Hema Hakenim, they are the Kenim Haboyim who come mechamas Avives Rechav, who descend from Hamas, the ancestor of the family of Rechav. So that Rechav is the father of Yonadab ben Rechav, who we just mentioned. So in other words, the pasuk is identifying them as Kenim, and Kenim means descendants of Yisrael, because one of the names of Yisrael is Keni. So we see therefore And the Pasuk is calling them Yoshve Sofrim, Yoshve Yabetz, that they were Tamar Chachamim, who sat together with Yabetz, and Tir Osim, also means they sat at the gates and taught Torah over there, and they were members of the Lishkas HaGazis. So we see that all of that was brought about by the fact that Yisrael offered Moshe food. So that's one pasuk that tells us about them. Now, elsewhere it says, "Uvnei Keni Choisen Moshe and Shoftim." It says the sons of the descendants of Keni, the father-in-law of Moshe, because again, Keni is one of the names of Yisrael. Olu Meirat Morim. They went up from the city of palms. They'd been living in Yericho. They'd been given a very fertile area near Yericho over there to live, but they left that place. Es Bnei Yehuda. They went to join the people of Yehuda, Midbar Yehuda, in the desert of Yehuda, Asher Benegev Arad. That is in the south of Arad. Vayelach vayeshev asa'am, and he, Osnio ben Knaz, went and sat with the people, and he sat with the Talmidim and taught them Torah. Elsewhere, the Gemara explains, in other words, that these descendants of Yisrael had been given this very fertile area near Yericho, and they voluntarily left it. They said, we're living very comfortably over here, but we have no Rebbe. And they find out that Osnio ben Knaz is living in the south of Eretz Yisrael, in the desert, in the poor desert areas of Eretz Yisrael, and he has no Talmidim, so they voluntarily left their place and went to there to become his Talmidim. And eventually they became so great that they became members of the Sanhedrin, who sat in the Lishkas HaGazis. So again, we're saying that all of this was brought about in the source that Yisrael offered Moshe food. So therefore, so that's an example of Karevas HaSerachoykim, Midian, which was distant from the Jewish people. As Rashi says, geographically, they had the source that Yisrael from Midian had that source to join the Jewish people and even become members of the Sanhedrin. Next, Rabbi Yochanan continued, we said that giving food to Orchim causes Hashem to, so to speak, overlook what the Rishoyim do wrong. Micha, we see that from the story of Micha, because as we just said, Micha was a Rosha, having made this pestle. But nevertheless, Hashem, so to speak, was willing to overlook his Averis and even tolerate his smoke getting mixed up with the smoke of the Mishkan because of the Mishkan Shiloh, because he was giving food to Orchim. Where do we see that giving food to somebody causes the Shechina to rest on a Navi of Baal? We see that Mechavera Shel Idoi HaNavi. We see that from the story of the other Navi in the story of Idoi. So we talked about previously, we talked about a little bit yesterday, we talked about more on Daf Peites, the whole story of the Navi who was sent to Yerovam to warn him that he better do Tshuva or Hashem is going to punish him. The Navi, not named in the Pasuk, but Chazal had the Kabbalah that his name was Idoi. So now, the Pasuk describes over there, he goes to Yerovam, he tells him, he starts speaking to the Mizbeach and saying, one day there's going to be a king named Yeshayahu who's going to take the bones of all the people who worshipped on this Mizbeach in front of the Egle Azahav and burn them on the Mizbeach, and Yerovam gets angry at the Navi and tries to grab him, and Hashem all of a sudden makes his hand paralyzed so he can't hit the Navi, and then he's forced to ask the Navi to daven for him, that his hand, that he should regain the function of his hand, and he does, and Yerovam is very impressed. He says, come with me home, I want to offer you food, and the Navi tells him that, no, Hashem told me I'm not allowed to eat and drink in this place. Then you have the continuation of the story, where another fellow who lives in town over there, a false Navi, comes and claims that he had a Nevuah that overrides Idoi's Nevuah, that he should come and eat and drink with him, and Idoi bore his story and went with him to eat and drink. This we had on Daf Pei Tes as an example of, therefore Idoi is an example of somebody who violates his own Nevuah, and is therefore Chayim Misri Deshamayim, and he was killed by a lion. So now, in the middle of that story, you have when they're sitting by the table and eating and drinking, Dichtiv, the Pasuk says, Vayihem Yoshrim al Shulchan, they were sitting by the table and eating and drinking together, Vayidvan Hashem al Navi Asher Hashivoi, all of a sudden the word of Hashem came to the Navi who had caused them to return. Meaning, in other words, that all of a sudden now you have a true Nevuah to Idoi that's coming through this false Navi who had tricked him and brought him to his house. And this false Navi tells him a true Nevuah that Hashem says, therefore you're not going to end up being buried with your ancestors. And sure enough, he was killed on the road by the lion over there. So we see that the schus of him giving food and drink to the Navi, and even though he did it in a very wrong way by tricking him, nevertheless, he had the schus because of that. That for a moment over there, he actually got a true Nevuah. So this can cause that even a false Navi temporarily gets true Nevuah. And the last one that Rabbi Yochanan listed, when we say that failure, that mistaken failure to give somebody food and drink is tantamount to doing it deliberately, that we have the Omer of Yehuda, Omer Rab, as we have what Rabbi Yehuda tells us in the name of Rab. Now you have like this, you have the story when David is on the run from Shaul, you have the whole part where Yonasan and David work out a plan where David is going to hide out in the fields for a couple of days, and then we have it as Zaptoda, Mocha Chodesh. And Yonasan is going to sound out Shaul and see what he thinks about David, and then he'll give him a coded message with the arrows, whether we should stay or whether we should run away. So you have that whole story. After that, you have David goes to the city of Noiv, and he's very hungry, and he goes to Achimelech the Kohen Gadol and asks him for food. And then, as we learned earlier on Daf Tzedekei, the result of that was Doeg was there, and he mastered on David on Achimelech that he's in cahoots with David, and that they're all rebelling against Shaul. And the result was that Achimelech and all the Kohenim of Noiv were executed, and then Doeg himself later on was punished. And David himself later on was punished, as we had all that previously on Daf Tzedekei. So now, Da'amar of Yehuda Amar Rab, Il Mole Hilvohu Yonasan L'David Shtei Kikris Lechem. If only Yonasan Ben Shaul had lent David, or Hilvohu doesn't mean lent, it means he would have accompanied him, Meloshon Levoya. If he would have sent him as accompaniment, two loaves of bread, which Maharsha points out is enough for two meals, then Noiv Irakoinim never would have been killed, because David wouldn't have had to go and ask Achimelech for food. Doeg Adomi wouldn't have been kicked out of Olam Abba, because the reason why he was is because of the Lashon Hara that he said about the Koinim of Noiv. Veloy Nerag Shaul or Shloshes Banav, and Shaul and his three sons wouldn't have been killed in battle, because that was one of the big contributing factors to why Shaul and his sons died in that battle. So we see, in other words, that now it's not that Yonasan deliberately didn't give David food. He and David are best friends. He didn't think about it. But we see that Shigagasa Ulazadan, we see therefore that failure to do it just by forgetting is tantamount to doing it bizadan, and it has very serious consequences. Maharsha points out, Shaul did several other things wrong, and in particular when you have the whole story with Shaul and the witch, then Shaul tells him, because you failed to wipe out Amalek when you were supposed to. Still, fine, that would mean that's why he loses his kingship because of that, but that he and his sons should all be killed in battle, that Maharsha explains, that was because he, at his command, all the Kohanim of Noiv were killed. So that's what we're saying, that if it hadn't been for that, then Shaul and his sons wouldn't have been killed. So therefore we see that this fact that Yonasan didn't give him food had very, very serious long-term consequences. All right.
The whole chain of reaction.
That's what we're saying. Every one thing leads to another, yeah.
It's the verse when he tells, that was the whole thing.
Yeah. No, that's the thing. In other words, we're saying that Doeg tattled about Noiv Rakoinim and got them killed. But he wouldn't have had the opportunity to do that if Yonasan had given David some food, because the whole reason what brought David to Noiv and to ask Achimelech for food is because he was hungry. But if Yonasan had given him food as for the trip, then he wouldn't have been in that situation. Yeah. Okay. The Gemara continues. Now, we learned yesterday that we had other kings of Yehuda. Now, here in our Mishnah, among the kings who lost their place in Olam Haba, we had only one king of Yehuda. We had Menasheh. But we said there were other kings of Yehuda who were Rishoyim as well. We mentioned Ochaz and Ahaziah. We said they're not going to live in Olam Haba. So the Gemara says, and what's named Madlai Monuas Ochaz? So why indeed did the Chacham not list Ochaz among those who lost their place in Olam Haba? So the answer is Amar Abiyumi Abba Vneshem Mutal Ben Shnei Tzadikim Ben Yosem L'Chizkiyahu, because he was located between two Tzadikim. His father Yosem was a Tzadik. Ad Kedekach, even the Gemara mentions elsewhere, that Rav Shimon ben Yochai says, if you could combine together the schus of myself and my son Rav Elazar and Yosem, then we would be able to save, we'd be able to protect the entire world from Hashem's judgment from the beginning of the world until the end of it, because Yosem was such an outstanding tzaddik.
When did he live?
He was in the middle of the first Beis Mikdash. He was one of the kings of Yehuda. He was Ochaz's father. And now, Ochaz's son is Chizkiyahu. So because Ochaz was between two tzaddikim, his father was a tzaddik Yosem, and his son was a tzaddik Chizkiyah, therefore, so because of their covered, in other words, he's not listed among those who ain't lam chevek lam abba. In other words, again, the implication would be that in fact he did lose his place in Olam Haba, as we learned yesterday, like Chayim v'Lenidonim, he's not coming alive by Tchias HaMeisim, he's not getting judged in Gehenim either, he's kind of floating around over there. We learned yesterday, Ben Yehoyada says it means that he and other kings like him are nisgalgo from generation to generation, and gradually over time, their neshamas are getting cleaned up in later Gilgulim. In any case, the point is, but in order, because of the covered of those two tzaddikim, he's not openly mentioned in our Gemara.
How he's able to go bad with his father?
How he's able to go bad. I'll tell you something very interesting. So you were asking me yesterday about what your father was asking. How comes it we have these outstanding Rishoyim over there who are so angry at Hashem and doing all these things, Dafka to be Machis Hashem, etc. So Das Sofrim, a commentary on Sefer Melachim, very interesting commentary, by the way, well worth learning. Anyway, he says... the author of Das Sofrim was named Rabinowitz. I don't remember his first name just now, but he wrote a Pirush on most of Tanakh. He lived close to our times. He was a Melamed in St. Louis for many years. Later on, he moved to Eretz Yisrael. Oh. He had some correspondence with the Rebbe. He was a Mechanech, yeah. Anyway, so he points out, really, you know, you look at it, beginning in the times of Ochaz, you had the kingdom of the Aseres HaShevatim is becoming very, very powerful and dominating even over Eretz Yehuda, and they, together with Aram, are going and attacking Eretz Yehuda and inflicting huge casualties, and it seems like the Goyim and the Rishoyim are becoming very, very successful. So that kind of thing, Pasha drove Ochaz around the bend and made him think, like, if the Rishoyim are being so set and the Goyim are being so successful, why are we going and continuing to follow Hashem? We might as well be like them. And not let him. So in other words, the idea would be, so he points out, you know, you find by Ochaz, it starts by saying that he didn't do, it starts by saying by Ochaz, that he didn't do the like also Yosha Ba'ini Hashem to David of it. He didn't do what was right in Hashem's eyes like David. Now, if he became such a Rosha, you're going to say he didn't do what was right like David. That seems, it seems like a very minor thing. That's what tells us. In other words, he started going from bad to worse. He started out, he's not like David, but in other words, he's not an out and out Rosha. But then he got worse and worse. And part of that, well, a big part of that is because he was driven crazy by these events of his time and he didn't know what to do with them. He didn't have the proper basis to understand how the Eibishter runs the world, and similarly with the kings after him, similarly with Menashe and Amon, similarly with Yehoyakim, all of them in their times, you have over and over, they're seeing how the Jewish people are being threatened with Golos, and the Goyim are becoming more and more powerful, so they didn't know what to do with it, basically. So that caused them to go off the derech. Anyway, so the point is, so therefore Ochaz was saying he's not listed among those who lost their place in Olam Haba because of this. Rabbi Yosef gives a different reason. We do find that Ochaz had embarrassment in the face of Yishayo. So the fact that he has that embarrassment shows that he's not such an incorrigible Rosha. Shenemar, you have like this. Again, you have, there's a point where Pekach ben Ramayohu, the king of the Aseres HaShevatim at that time, and Ritzin Melech Aram, the king of Aram, are joining forces to attack Yehuda. And Ochaz is very frightened, and in fact, the Psukim and Divrei Yomim mentioned that they caused huge casualties. They killed 120,000 soldiers from Shevet, from Malchus Yehuda all in one day, and it's their own fellow Jews, yeah. So now, the Pasuk says, so Ochaz is very afraid of what's going to happen. And his kingship is in great danger. The pasuk says, "Vayomer Hashem al Yishayo." Hashem says to Yishayah, "Say no lekras Ochaz. Go now out to see Ochaz. After you ushor Yoshuv benecha and your son Shaor Yoshuv, which actually means your tamidim. Shaor means the remnant Yoshuv who returned from their averus and became your children, your tamidim." So in other words, in a simple sense, we'd say that Shor Yosha was the name of his son. But Rashi explains over here, based on other sources, That Sha'or Yosu means the remnants of the Jewish people who've returned, who've done tshuva from their Avedas, and become your Talmidim. So you take them and you go to meet Ochaz, and as we learned yesterday, Ochaz was trying to prevent people from learning Torah. He was closing all the shuls in the Batei Medrash, so Yeshaya should go to him with his Talmidim and show him openly that no, your plots are never going to succeed. Anyway, you go and meet him. I'll say to Olas Abrecha HaYona, go meet him by the end of the channel of the upper pool, so there were pools of water near Yerushalayim, which among other things people would use for laundry and for water and for drinking water and other such things. El Masilas Sdei Chovis, you're going to meet him by the road of the field of the launderers. So in the simple sense, it means exactly that. There would be a field where people would wash their clothing in the spring over there, and then they would set them out, and they would lay them out to dry on rocks over there in that area, and they'd beat them if they had to clean them and whatever. Anyway, my kovis, but why is the Pasuk mentioning a, why is the Pasuk mentioning laundry, and why is Yeshaya supposed to meet Elchaz Davka there? Ikadamri, so one explanation is kovis, Meloshin kovish. That when Ochaz saw Yeshaya, he lowered his face and covered his face and went by so Yeshaya wouldn't recognize him. So in other words, we see that he's embarrassed of Yeshaya. Yeshaya is coming with all his Talmidim, and Ochaz is embarrassed, and therefore Kovash, he hid his face. The Ikadamri, others say, Uchla de Katsri Sochafareshe. Ochaz took a took a colander of the laundry man. Rashi describes this is a keli that has a lot of holes in it. They would fill it with water and they would use it to sprinkle water on the clothes and part of the process of washing them. Like nowadays, you have an iron that has holes in it for steam to come out. So in those times, they use this Uchla de Katsri for the same kind of thing. A related point, one of the Goyim, Reb Nachman Roy Goyim, gives a different explanation, a slightly different explanation, that it was used, they would put spices in it when they wanted to perfume the clothing, they would put spices in such a container and they would burn it, and then, and through the holes, the smoke would come and perfume the garment. Whatever the case, it was something that laundry men would have, so therefore, so now, in this area where the laundry men are doing their work, you find such a keli. He put it over his head, so in order to disguise himself, so Yeshaya wouldn't recognize him. V'cholof, and he wore, and he passed by. So either way, the point is that he hid him. He hid his face. He didn't want Yeshaya to see him. Why? Because he's embarrassed of the, of all of his averus, and here Yeshaya is coming to tell him. In the end, actually, Yeshaya's nevuah is actually a positive one. Hashem tells him, "Don't be afraid of these two guys. Their power is soon gonna fall apart. Instead, have b'tochen in the Eibishter." And there continues a whole conversation over there.
That sounds good.
But the outcome actually was that the outcome was not so good, actually. Ochaz says, I don't trust what Hashem says. In the end, actually, the Pesukim in Malachim describe that Ochaz decided to make an alliance with the kings of Ashur. He sends them a huge bribe. He tells them, I want you to come into the war on my side. And now the Pesuk goes on, and now on the one hand, they defeated Aram and killed their king over there, and that sort of remove the threat. On the other hand, the Pesukim also say that Ashur themselves caused a lot of trouble to the Jewish people then and further on, more so in Chizkiyahu's time, so therefore, so it backfired, basically. Eventually, Ashur took the Aseret HaShavatim into Golos, and eventually, a few years later, Sancheiriv came and attacked Yehuda and nearly conquered it as well, so. So that's another reason why not to mention Ochaz, because we see he had a certain shame in front of Yeshaya. Next, the Gemara says, "Mifnei Malon Monuas Omoin." So why is Omoin not listed? We learned yesterday that Omoin was even worse than Menashe. We said that he burnt a sefer Torah, he had relations with his mother, and said, "I'm doing a davka lahachis," etc., etc.
His son was
Omoin. Omoin was Menashe's son. So you have like this. Okay, so let's make a seder over here. You have Ochaz, who we're saying was a rasha. Then you had his son Chizkiyahu, who was a tzaddik. Then you had Menashe, who was an outstanding Rasha, and he's the one mentioned in the Mishnah as so. Menashe was mentioned in the Mishnah. That you have the Machlokas, the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda, whether he regained his place in Olam Habo after his Tshuva.
Yeah, the Gemara said yes.
The Gemara had said that. We still have the Chachamim in the Mishnah who said that he lost his place in Olam Habo. We have Rabbi Yehuda said that he did regain it. We had Rabbi Yochanan saying, "Don't say that he didn't, because then you're going to discourage Bali Tshuva." But the fact is, we have the Mishnah in front of us that says that he lost his place in Olam Haba. Then you have his son Omon, who we said was an even worse Rasha. Then after that, Omon was assassinated, and then you have his son Yeshiyahu, was a great tzaddik. So, Mipnei Malei Monuas Omon. So Omon, who's the son of Menashe, why, and he was a tremendous Rasha, why is he not listed over here? And the answer is with Mikvah Yisrael Yoshiyahu, because of the honor of Yoshiyahu, he's Yoshiyahu's father, and Yoshiyahu was a tzaddik, so therefore we don't want to say that his father lost his place in Ramba. So the Gemara says, Menashe Nami Le'Nimni. By that logic, you shouldn't count Menashe either if Mikvah Yisrael Chizkiyahu, because after all, he's the son of the great tzaddik Chizkiyahu. The answer is Bro Mizaki Abba, Abba Le Mizaki Bro. You should realize a son can bring schus to his father, but a father cannot bring schus to his son. Meaning the fact that Oman was a tremendous Rosha, that's true, but he had a son, Yoshiyahu, and Yoshiyahu's chosim are able to help his father in the Olam Emes, to the extent that he didn't lose his chelik in Olam Abba.
Before we said he was sandwiched between a good a father.
That's what we said about Ochaz, the sandwich between them, but now we're saying, particularly, when it comes to, you have a father who's a Rosha and a son is a tzaddik, the chosim of the son can help the father.
Could help.
Can help the father. But on the other hand, Abel, a Mizaki Bra, a father's chosim cannot help a son. So therefore, Chizkiyahu's chosim could not save Menashe. If Menashe had a good son, then fine. But since his son was Omon, who was also a Rosha, then therefore he doesn't have anybody to help him. Now Tosfos does mention elsewhere. We find in Sota that we talked about yesterday. We talked about Avshalom lost his place in Olam Haba. But then we said the Gemara says in Sota that David davened on his behalf, and according to one opinion, he brought him to Olam Haba. Tosfos distinguishes over there if the father davens for the Tosfos says over there actually Avshalom got his punishment in Olam Hazeh. After all, he was hanged up by his hair and then he was killed. So therefore, that together with David's tefillos for him can help to get him into Gan Eden. But here with Menashe, we don't have that. His own tshuva, according to the Chachamim in our Mishnah, was not enough to regain him his place in Olam Haba, and therefore Chizkiyahu's chosim are not going to help him either.
When he was being cooked and he was being tortured.
So we said he did tshuva. We said he did tshuva, but we also said it was like a superficial kind of tshuva, like, fine, you know, Hashem, you have to help me, otherwise I'm going to think that you're the same as the Gensh, Chas v'Shalom. So yeah, according to the Chachamim, that's not good enough. And then Chizkiyahu's chosim are not going to help him either. Dichtiv, as for example, the Pasuk says, Ein li yodi matzil. Hashem says, there's no one who saves from my hand, which means, Ein Avraham matzil is Yishmael. For example, Avraham cannot save Yishmael. Now, Yishmael, according to many opinions, did tshuva, and in that case, then fine, Avraham, he doesn't need Avraham's chosim to save him. But not everybody agrees to that, so therefore, according to the opinions, that he didn't do tshuva, we're saying Avraham's chus can't save him. And similarly, Yitzchak's chusim cannot save Esav. Marshor explains the logic behind it is like this. It's one thing when the father is a Rosha and the son is a tzaddik, means the son is consciously not doing like his father and he wants to be better. So therefore his chosim can help his father. But when it's a father a tzaddik and a son a Rosha, on the contrary, why didn't the son learn from his father to be a tzaddik? So therefore it's held more against him. Why didn't you learn from him? So therefore Menashe is knocked out. So the Gemara says, yeah, Pashta de Osis Lahochi. Now that we realize this point, then fine. Ochaz Nami Lo Imni Mishum Kvodesh Ochaz Kiyahu. Then we don't have to say, like we said before, because Ochaz is sandwiched between two tzaddikim. The fact that he's the son of Yosem doesn't really help him. But the reason is, and it doesn't have to be because of his embarrassment in front of Yeshaya, it's rather because of the schus of his son Chizkiyah, that schus helped him in the Olam Emes. Okay. The Gemara continues. Now we asked before why Yehoyakim wasn't mentioned. Where we said Yehoyakim was another king of Yehuda who was a tremendous Rasha. We said that he said, "Who needs Hashem's light?" We have Zahav Parvayim. We said that he tattooed a name of Avodah Zarah, a name of Hashem, on his male organ. So why is he not? His father was Yoshiyahu. But again, a father's chusim don't help a son. His son was Yehoyachin, otherwise known as Yechonia. Now Yechonia himself, to begin with, was a Rosha. Later on, he did tshuva. I suppose the Gemara could have answered that because his son did tshuva, maybe it helped him. But the Gemara is going to give a different answer. The reason is Mishum de Reb Chiya b'Reb Avuya, because of the story involving Reb Chiya b'Reb Avuya, which we also learned previously on Daf Pei Beis. The Amr Reb Chiya b'Reb Avuya, Ksiva Gugoltei Shel Yehoyachim Zois V'Oid Acheres. The skull of Yehoyakim was written, this and something else, meaning he's already been punished once in this world, and now he has yet another punishment, another nekama that Hashem is going to do against him. Jehoiakim was, as I said, he was one of the last kings of Yehuda. In his times, Nebuchadnezzar conquered Eretz Yisrael and made Jehoiakim his vassal. Then a few years later, vassal means that he's subject to him. He has to pay him tribute and so forth. A few years passed like that, and then Jehoiakim rebelled against Nebuchadnezzar. So Nebuchadnezzar brought his army into Eretz Yisrael and started besieging Yerushalayim, and in the course of that, Jehoiakim was killed. The Medrash actually goes into some detail about it. The Sanhedrin wanted to hand over Jehoiakim because he endangered the whole Jewish people, and they're arguing back and forth whether it's the right thing to do. In the end, he died or was killed. The Medrash there brings different opinion. Is it that they killed him and then handed the body over to Nebuchadnezzar? Is it that they sent him out alive and Nebuchadnezzar killed him? Or is it actually he was so pampered, he was such a delicate person, he's a king after all, that when they were lowering him down by a rope from the wall, then he died on the way down. Whatever the case, he was not properly buried. Yirmiyahu had said a nevuah about him, kavuras chamer yikover, he's going to be buried like the way a donkey is buried. You don't dig a proper caver for a donkey, you just throw it into the nearest hole. The same way his body is going to end up like that. So now, Zeus, this punishment already happened to him, and now another one. And we're going to tell how that happened, which we also had previously a couple of weeks ago. The point is, that was enough of a kapara for him that therefore he's able to get a place lo lamabo. So what happened? Zkeno did a preda. The grandfather of Reb Preda, who was this same Reb Chiya Reb Avuya, Ashkach Gugalta to have a kashadi b'shari Yerushalayim. He saw a skull that was lying in the gates of Yerushalayim. Uksiba Zois Vo'idacheres, and the skull had written on it Zois Vo'idacheres. He didn't know whose skull it was, but it's a skull. We got to bury it. Can't cause tumah in Yerushalayim. Kovra, he buried it Vlaikbra, but it wouldn't stay buried. It kept on popping out. Kovra Vlaikbra. Earlier, when we learned this on Dachte days, the Gemara had given a somewhat different expression, but the point was Vahadu Novo, the Gemara says whatever, it kept on popping out. Omar, so he realizes to himself, Gugolta Shir Yehoiakim, this must be Yehoiakim's skull, Dichtidei, as the Pasuk says on him, Kvoras Chamer Yikover, he's going to be buried like the burial of a donkey, Sochet V'Hashlech V'Gomer, where a donkey is just dragged out and schlepped out beyond the gates, so now he's not able to be buried. Omar, but he thinks to himself, Malka, who after all said and done, he was a king, it's not really right that to be mezalzel on him, that he should lie there unburied. He wrapped up the skull in silk cloth and he put it in a chest in his house until he could figure out what to do with it. His wife saw it. Savra, she thought, this must be the skull of his first wife, that he can't forget her. He's still keeping her skull as a memento. Earlier on that day, as we had a little differently, where she asks the neighbors, why do you think my husband brought a skull into the house? And the neighbors tell her it must be from his first wife. Anyway, she didn't like that idea at all. Shogra tanura, she fired up the oven. The kalsan, she burnt that skull. That bears out the Zois, he was punished the first time by dying unnaturally and not being buried, and then another one that now even his last remains, his skull, was burnt, so therefore he got enough of his kapara that now he's able to have a place to
Olam HaBa. It's
a bone, but I guess with a heart and a fire it can burn, yeah.
He got scared from when he saw his outcome from Yehoiakim. Did this king get scared? See that he's killed a chamor?
Did the king after him? I don't know. The post says on Yehoiakim.
The
Yehoiakim.
The skull.
This wasn't a king. This was Reb Chiya Reb Avuya in the time of the second Beis Mikdash.
Oh.
Yeah, he was one of the Chachamim. Causes tumor, but yeah, it's still okay. I mean, a skull by itself, I don't remember if it causes too much oil. It causes mago masa. I don't remember if it causes too much oil.
If the
skull is missing a small amount, then it's not matame anymore, right? So maybe it was missing. Maybe it was missing enough that it's not matame. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. Marsha points out, in other words, that what we're saying is Jehoiakim had done two things wrong. We learned yesterday. He denied. He said we don't need the light of Hashem, and he tattooed a name of Avodah Zarah, or a name of Hashem, on his body, on his male organ. So corresponding to that, because he did that, he tattooed that on his body. Therefore, his body wasn't able to be buried, and therefore it had this Zois V'Oidacheres inscription on it. And because he denied that Hashem gives us light, then therefore he was burnt, and he was burnt in the oven.
He's the one that Hashem said your children won't live, won't survive, because his organ was like a fight.
No. I'm not sure.
He said because
he
had a navi. Someone else had a fire. He had a dream about a fire on his.
No, that's what we learned the other day. What we said was the other day. We said that Achitofel had a dream where he saw fire coming out of that part of his body, and he thought that meant that he's destined to become a king. But in fact, it wasn't him. It was his great granddaughter Bathsheba who married David, and his granddaughter Bathsheba, and his great grandson is Shlomo HaMelech. The Gemara continues. Now, let's talk about what happened with Chizkiyahu. So you have like this. After Sanhedrin's army was destroyed, you also had at that time that Chizkiyahu was very sick, and he was healed, B'derech Nes, and the sun went backwards. We learned back on Daf Tzedek Vav that the king, Merodach Baladan of Babel, was very impressed, and he sends messengers to Chizkiyahu. Now, the Pasuk describes like this. When he sent these messengers to Chizkiyahu, Vayismach aleihem Chizkiyahu was very happy to see the. Tanya, Omer Rav Shimon Elazar. There was a chain of events over here. Bishvil hatoy beinecha asisi. Let's talk about Chizkiyahu then. So we have like this. So again, Chizkiyahu is very very sick. And he davens to Hashem to cure him, and Hashem sends Yeshaya to tell him. First, Hashem sends Yeshaya to tell him you're going to die and you're not going to live. You have the whole story in Brachas where he tells him because you didn't get married, and therefore, yeah. So then Chizkiyahu davens, Hashem sends Yeshaya back with a nevuah that you're going to be cured and you're going to live another 15 years, and you're also going to be saved from Sanhedrin of Melech Ashur. So after Chizkiyahu recovered, then you have the whole thing where Merodach Baladan sends messengers to Chizkiyahu to find out what happened and to show him respect. That was the whole thing with the letter that they sent that we talked about back on Daf Tzedek Vav. Anyway, then you had the result now. The Pesukim describe Chizkiyahu showed the messengers everything, all his treasures and everything, and Yeshaya came to him with a very harsh nevuah, saying, because of that, your own descent, all these treasures that you showed them are eventually going to be pillaged by the soldiers of Babel 100 years from now, and your own descendants are going to be brought to the palace of the king of Babel to serve over there, which is Daniel, and according to one opinion, Hanani Mishael Vazalia, because we talked about whether Hanani Mishael Vazalia are descended from Shevet Yehuda or not. In any case, so now the Gemara points out, Tanya, Omer of Shimon Elazar, there was a chain of causation over here. B'shvil ha-toy v'enecha asisi. Because Chizkiyahu, in his tefillah to Hashem, he gives himself credit. He says, I did what was good in your eyes. So Avera Gerera Savera, because of that, Ma'os. The result was that a few psukim later, when Yeshaya tells him that Hashem told me in the void, you're going to recover, then he says, Ma'os, can I have, where's a sign? Let me have a sign that this is actually going to happen. So in other words, because he took credit for himself, therefore Avera Gerera Savera, and therefore that caused him to slightly doubt what Hashem is saying and ask for a sign.
But how did he take credit? Because he got.
He's saying to Hashem, I did what was good in your eyes. Therefore, please remember that source and heal me.
Which was what he did?
He did a lot of good things. He did tremendous good things for the Jewish people. But nevertheless, he shouldn't have been taking credit for himself. The Gemara in Brachas, by the way, mentions one particular thing. It means he was simich geula l'tefila. In his times, he didn't have a fixed order of davening yet, but he was always careful to say Goal Yisrael before his main tefila, before Shemoneh Esrei. So therefore, but more generally, the Pesukim describe in Divrei Hayamim, you have four entire chapters that describe all the good things that Chizkiyahu did. Of strengthening the Torah among the Jewish mitzvahs, among the Jewish people. Nevertheless, he shouldn't have taken credit for it when he's talking to Hashem. So because of that, that led him to a slight doubt of what Hashem says, and to say, Ma'os, where's the sign that this nevuah is going to come true? And b'shvil ma'os, because of that sign happened, the result was that therefore Merodach Baladan sent these messengers, and he invited them, nochrim ochel al shulchanai, he invited these goyim to eat by his table and showed them great respect. And because they fed them by his table and showed them all that respect, Goram Golos the Bonner, because that his descendants went into Golos, as we're saying, that they were taken to the palace of Melech Babel. So the Gemara says, Messiah, so one thing led to another. Then Yehoyada points out, in other words, like this, if he hadn't praised himself, then he would have been zeicha that the nevuah that he's going to recover wouldn't have had to come through Yeshaya. He himself would have had that nevuah. Well, if he had that nevuah, he wouldn't have been asking for a sign that's going to come true, because he knows that's his own nevuah. Because it came through Yeshaya, therefore he felt it necessary to ask for an oiz. Apparently he would have been on the level that he could have received the nevuah on this. And because of that, the result was nochrim al ha-shulchanai, because now Melech bubbles, where he's very amazed by it, and sends his messengers and so forth. So the Gemara says, Messiah of the Chizkiah. This supports what Chizkiah says. Not Chizkiah the king, but Chizkiah the Amora. A person who invites a goy, an Ovid Avodah Zarah, into his house, or Meshamash Olav, and serves him, as the Gemara explains over here, that Chizkiyahu and his queen were serving these guests, instead of just delegating it to their servants or whatever, Goyim Golos Labanah, he calls it Golos to his children, Shenema, as the Navi tells him, among your descendants who come from you, Asher Tolid, that you're gonna bear, Yikochu will be taken, and they're gonna be servants and ministers in the king in the palace of the king of Babel. So the Gemara explains what did Chizkiah do wrong over there. So the pasuk says Vayismach aleihem Chizkiah. Chizkiah was very happy to see these he was very happy to see these foreign guests. He thought it's going to make a great honor to the Jewish people and all. There's actually the story is actually told in two different places. It's told in Melachim and Yeshaya. In one place it says Vayishma, in the other place it says Vayismach. Anyway, he was very happy about them. Vayarim es kol beis nechoisa. He showed them all of his treasures, as a kesef, as a zav, as a besamim, all the silver and the gold and the besamim, beis hashemen atoyva gemer, and the good oil, meaning the shemen amishcha, and he showed them everything.
Wow, really?
So he's showing them everything, and that's why the Navi criticized him. So Omar Rav, my base nechoisoi. So specifically, what do we mean by base nechoisoi? The simple meaning is Rashi explains on the pasuk means his spice storehouse. But the Gemara is explaining ishta hishkasaleim. His own wife served them drinks. Now, why is his wife called Mechoisoi? Rashi explains, where did the original wife come from Adam and Ishan? A piece was removed from Adam's body and Chava was created. The word Nocha means to subtract. So therefore, why a person's wife can be called Beis Mechoisoi, as in the one, it was subtracted from him to create her. Another point is also, Marsha says also the point is, a beis nechoisei suggests a thing that's usually kept hidden. Like a person, a queen doesn't usually go out in public and isn't usually shown off to everybody. So here, but here he's showing her off and having her personally serve them. So that's one explanation. Or Shmuel Amar beis gnoz of Herolahem. Shmuel says it means he showed them his treasuries. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Zayin Oichol Zayin Herolahem. Rabbi Yochanan showed them that he has weapons made of iron that's able to cut through other iron. So in that case, beis nechoisei is Moloshan Hakam, Moloshan striking, that this is iron powerful enough to cut through other iron. And we learned actually previously on Daf Tzedek Vav, we said that when Nebuzaradan came to destroy Yerushalayim and the Beis Mikdash, he brought hundreds of mules, loads worth of such axes of iron that can cut through iron. Where did they get the concept that such a thing exists? From this. In fact, the Abarbanel and the Malbim and Gioin at some length over there on Yeshaya with how did all this cause such a harsh thing that because of that there's going to be Golos and Churban and so on and so forth. So the Abarbanel makes the point, basically, he says that there was already a Gzera of Golos before that. Chizkiyahu's Tzidkus was preventing and delaying that. But nevertheless, Hashem is telling him that now that you also showed that you're not where you're supposed to be, really, as far as Amunah in the Eibishter, and that you're relying on foreign Goyim, then therefore the consequences are going to come true after all. So it's not so much a punishment, but more just telling him the facts. The Malbim makes a point also, and the Abarbanel mentions it briefly as well, that the fact is, you're showing these guys all your treasures, that gives them the idea, hey, there's a rich country over here. You know what? Let's keep that in the back of our minds, and eventually we'll want to take advantage of that.
So. Yeah, they could be scared that they won a war, a big war against
them. But on the other hand, they didn't actually win a war. Hashem destroyed the army of Sancheirim, the Derech Nes. But nevertheless, they can still realize that Hashem is not always going to protect the Jewish people if they don't live up to it. So now by showing them all this treasures, he's like planting the idea in their minds, you know, this would be a great kingdom to take over all its treasures. Yeah. Okay. Now that we talked about that, now let's get into talking about the Churban, which was the result of that. So the Gemara is going to go and darshan a bunch of psukim in Megillas Eicha. It begins Eicha Yoshua Bodod. So Omer Rava, Omer Rabbi Yochanan, name Mal Loku Yisrael be'Eicha. Why were the Jewish people struck with Eicha? Each of the first, second, and fourth kapitlach of Eicha all begin with that same word Eicha. Eicha literally means how. So in the simple sense, it means how could it be that. But why specifically that word? Because they were over on all 36 Averas for which people are high of Kares, and Eicha is Gematria 36. In fact, there are other, the Medrash on the Eicha Rabbah goes into further details. The one represents the one Hashem, the Yud represents the Aseres HaDibros, etc. So like they were being over on many different areas of Torah. And the Gemara continues, Amar Rav Yechanan, name Mal Loku ba'Aleph Beis, why were they struck with Aleph Beis, where we see that four out of the five chapters of Megillas Eicha are in Aleph Beis order, because they violated the Torah, which is given with the Aleph Beis, with the 22 letters of the Aleph Beis. The Gemara continues, when it says, Yoshva Bodad, how is it that the Jewish people are sitting alone? Omar Rava, Omar Rav Yechanan, Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem is saying, Ani Amarti, I had said that it should be Bodah in a positive sense. Vayishkin Yisrael Betach Bodah, and Moshe says at the end of his brachas, in his Oysa Baracha, and the Jewish people lived Betach securely Bodah alone, meaning they don't have to rely on the other goyim around them, Ein Yaakov, like the way of Yaakov's Baracha, El Eretz Dogon Vasirosh, in a land of grain and wine, and they have a plentifulness of everything they need, Afshon of Yarfutol, even the heavens will drip dew. It'll be a very fertile, blessed land. So they'll have bodad in the positive sense that they don't have to rely on anybody else. Achshav, now that they sinned, ye bodad meshavim. Instead, they have the negative kind of bodad that they're alone, and everybody stays away and considers them like mitzoroyim. The Medrash actually goes on and explains throughout all the Pesukim of the first Perek of Iyud like that. Each one of them, the Medrash finds a phrase in that Pesuk that it was supposed to be, a phrase like that for Bracha, and instead it became the opposite. The Gemara continues, Ho'ir Rabosi'om, when it says the city with a multitude of people, with many people. So that means, Omer Rava, Omer Rav Yechanan, it means that they were taking steps to grow in population as much as possible. So you must see in Ketana Lagodol, Ugdola Lakotin. They would marry off a younger girl to an older man and an older woman to a younger man. The point is, Rashi explains, younger men and women, or your children, or teens, they're not so fertile. The men are not able to be mazriya as much, and the women are not able to become pregnant as much. They want to maximize their fertility, so therefore they would make sure that if it's a younger man, then they would have him marry an older woman, so that way she's more likely to become pregnant with his zera, and vice versa, a younger girl to an older man, so that way he's able to produce potent zera. In other words, the idea being, in other words, if they had, Rashi explains, if they had younger men and younger women marrying one another, it might become very difficult for them to become pregnant, because both of them are not fully developed yet. So they were doing that. So they were doing that, and therefore their population was growing by leaps and bounds. So that they would have many children. Next, the pasuk says, "Hoisa ka'almana." She was like a widow. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, ke'almana v'le'almana mamash. It means the Jewish people are like a widow, but not actually a widow. Like a woman whose husband has gone overseas and he plans to return to her. The same way, we haven't lost Hashem entirely, Chas v'Shalom. Hashem is still with us and watching over us, but he's temporarily away and temporarily showing as if he's not. Closely taking care of us. Marsha explains, you know, what you have is any other nation, when they fall, it's because their sar in Shemayim has fallen. Hashem has knocked down their sar, and therefore they're goners. But we Jewish people, we're not under any sar, we're directly under Hashem, and Hashem is always there, so therefore we're only ke almana. The Gemara continues, Rabosi Bagoyim Sorosi Bamadinis, when it says that Yerushalayim was populated, was huge among the Goyim, many among the Goyim, and the princess over the nations, over the countries. Omar Rava, Omar Rav Yechanan, it means even in Golos, Kol Mokom Shein Hochen, Nasin Sodim Ladunehem, wherever the Jewish people go, even in Golos, they end up becoming masters over their own, they end up becoming rulers over their own masters. As the Gemara gives a story, Tanan Abanan, it happened that two Jews were taken captive by a goy, by Harakano, v'hoyashabai mahalach achareihem. This the captor, the goy who had captured them, was walking behind them. To watch, to guard them. Omalei echa mehem lachaveri. One of the Jewish captives says to the other, "Gomel shema halachas lafanenu." The camel that's walking in front of us. Suma ba'achas meinel. It's blind. It's far ahead of us. There's a camel walking. It's blind in one eye. Utuuna shtei nodes achas shayin ba'achas shafemen. It's carrying two skin bags of liquid, one with wine and one with oil. Ushnei ben adam haman higemosa. And the two people who are leading this camel, echad yisrael ve'echad nachri. One's a yid. One's a goy. So the one yid is telling the other that I can tell from clues on the road that this is how it is. Omalan Shabai, so the goyish captor says to them, "Am kshe'odif, you stubborn people. Me'ayin atem yodim. How do you know such a thing?" So they explain like this. How do we know the camel is blind? The camel, that there's a camel, fine. They can see steps of a camel. But how do we know it's blind? Gomel, me'asovim shalofanea, the grass that's ahead of it, mitzad shedroya echeles, mitzad she'ena roya ena echeles. It's only eating from the side that it can see. A camel usually would go back and forth and eat the grass from one side of the road and from the other, but here it's blind in one eye, so it can't see the grass on one side. Therefore, we can see that the grass on one side has been eaten by a camel, and the other one not. That tells us the camel is blind in one eye.
When they continue, that's carrying two skin bags of liquid, one with wine, one with oil. How do we know?
The wine, when it leaks, then the wine gets absorbed into the ground, and we can see the drops that were there on one side have been absorbed into the ground. The shoshemen metaftif itself, but the oil, when it drips, it stays on the surface. It doesn't get absorbed into the ground so easily because oil is lighter. So therefore, we can see on one side of the road, we can see drops that have been absorbed into the ground, and the other side, we can see drops that are staying on the surface. Therefore, we can see that it's wine and oil respectively. As far as the two people who are leading it, Echad Nachri ve'Echad Yisrael, was telling you one is a Yid and one is a Goy and one is a Yid. How do we know? Nachri nifna l'derech, because the Goy, when he needs to go to the bathroom, he does it right there in the middle of the road. He doesn't have any tznius. The Yisrael nifna l'tzadin, whereas the Yid goes off to the side. So therefore, we can see in various places as we're going along the road over here, we can see places where there's human waste in the middle of the road, and we can see where there's on the side. So therefore, we realize it must be a Goy and a Yid. Rodef achreihem. So the goyish captor chases after them to catch up to them. Umotzek edivreim, he finds everything is exactly like his two Jewish captives said. Bo neshokon al roshon, he came back, he kissed them on their head. Ve'aviyan lebeisei, he brought them to his house. Ve'osalan sudah doyle, he made for them a big sudah in their honor, to honor them for their chokhmah. Ve'yimirakad lefneim, and he's even dancing in front of them.
Wow.
Doesn't happen
these days.
Yeah. So and he says, Baruch blessed is Hashem who chose the descendants of Avraham, that he gave them some of Avraham's chokhmah, and that in fact, like we just darshan from the pasuk, everywhere where Jews go, nasim sodom ladinehem, they dominate over their own masters. Here I'm officially your master because I captured you, and here you've shown yourselves to be greater and more important than I am. Rashi actually also adds the detail that they told this goy that he actually seems to have the appearance of the king. So Rashi says that there was nus involved, and this person is actually related to the king. So on the side over here, it brings actually from Kisveyad and the Menorah Samora, when he brings this Gemara, has a lot, much, much, much more detail to the story. They told him, and the story continues, it seems to us that our master, that you, seem to have the appearance of a king. So he goes and asks his mother, and then, you know, I don't know that I'm related to a king at all. So the goy goes and asks his mother, and he threatens her, basically, you better tell them, and if not, then I'm going to kill you. This is a goy talking to his mother like that. So he says, what can I tell you? It came from my wedding to your father, then a king or a king's minister or whatever, Klas Dashal Melech actually means one of the king's ministers, came in and was mizana with me, and I became pregnant.
So sure enough, so that's why you look like, that's why. So it's true. He looks like the king's minister because in fact that is actually his father.
Not the king, the king's minister.
Whatever, that's what I said. Klasta actually, it seems, means the king's minister or whatever. So then the story continues that this goy brings them and offers them meat. Maybe, presumably he brought them kosher meat, but whatever. They tell him this meat seems to taste of dog. And again, he goes and asks his mother and tells her, you better tell me the truth or I'm going to kill you. And he says, well, we had a sheep. And then the mother sheep, the ewe, died. And we had to have the baby, had to nurse somehow. So we had to nurse from a dog. So now, sometime later, he had shefted this animal to give to his Jewish servant, and they could recognize that yes, it has the taste of dog in it from the fact that it had she gives him a whole treasure that he had inherited from his father's caver, and then that's he gave them a lot of money or potron, and he let them free for hokel of a tam l'shalom, and they went home peacefully. So we see that bossi ba goyim, so rossi ba medinas, that even at a time like that, even then Jews show themselves that they're smarter and more capable than the goyim around them. Next, the pasuk continues in Eicha. Bochay sivke balayla. She cries at night. Shtei bechias halolu lama. Why the double expression of crying? Amar Rabba, Amar Rabbi Yechonon. Echad amikdash rishon, ve'echad amikdash sheni. For the first and the second, bate mikdash, both of them are being. Yirmiyah was writing at the time in the churban bayis rishon, but nevertheless, he's knowing the nevuah that there's going to be a churban bayis sheni as well. The post continues by Lila. She cries at night. Why dafka at night? Al iske Lila, because of something that had happened many years earlier at night. Shenema, as you have after the Merdaglim return, by Kisa Kola Eda, the entire congregation lifted up by Yitnus Kolam, and they started crying loudly. By Yivko Amba Lila Ahu, and the people cried on that night. So Omer Rabbi Yechanan, Oisa Hayoim, Oisa Lila, whatever, Leil Tesba of Hoya, that was Tisha B'Av night. Omer Lahan Akarish Baruch Li Yisrael, Atem Bechisim Bechia Shochinam, you cried, crying for nothing, because you're claiming you're not going to be able to conquer Eretz Yisrael, when that's not true. Bani Ekba Lacham Bechia Ladoris, I'm going to make on this night, you're going to be crying in future generations as well. So that's Balayla. Dover Acha Balayla, another meaning of Balayla. Anybody who cries at night, their voice carries further, and it goes further. People hear him because by day it's more noisy, but by night the voice carries. So therefore, more people have rachmanos. Rashi mentions the point. The Gemara mentions elsewhere during the daytime. You have the Gemara has the expression. You have the sound of the sun carving through the heaven as it's moving, so therefore you have like a loud noise that blocks out other noises. But by night, you don't have that, so therefore people hear the cry from further away and they have rachmanos. And nevertheless, Rashi says, the pasuk still makes the point, ein menachem lo, there's nobody comforting us. So, another explanation, Balayla, called a boicha Balayla, a person who cries at night, the stars and the planets cry together with him because they also have Rachmanos on him. And by night is when you have them in the sky, so therefore Balayla. Another meaning is when a person cries at night, anybody who hears it sympathizes with them, and they also cry opposite them. In fact, Maisa b'ishachas shchente shuram gamliel. It happened once with a woman, a neighbor of Rav Gamliel, shemes b'na, her son died. Voice of boicha all the balayla, and every night she was crying about him. Shama Rav Gamliel kolo v'ocha kenegder. Rav Gamliel heard her voice and was also crying. In fact, the Medrash, when it tells the story, says that when her cries evoked by him the memory of the korban, and therefore he started crying over that. Until his eyelashes were falling out because of all the crying. Or not necessarily falling out. Rashi says, it's like overgrowing his eyes. Next day, the Talmidim saw what's going on, how much Rav Akiva is crying at night, but and they asked her to move out, they helped her move out of the neighborhood so that her cries wouldn't continue to disturb Rav Gamliel. The pasuk continues, "V'dim osa alechya," her tears in Eicha continues, "V'dim osa alechya," her tears are on her cheeks. Omar Rava, Omar Rabbi Yechanan, this means ki ishesh aboicha bal nureh. We're talking about the kind of crying that a woman would cry over the husband of her youth, where she misses him very much. Kenema, as the pasuk in fact expresses that, Eli mourn kibsula chagura sak al bal nureh, like a bsula like a young woman who's girded with sackcloth over the husband of her youth. In other words, we're there. The mourning, the avelos, is much more tremendous because she misses him because she's been with him since her youth. So the same way, in other words, we're saying this is the kind of crying v'dimasa lechya. Rashi explains that the point is that lechya is meloshin lach, meloshin moist, freshness. So like this is her husband from when she was fresh and young, and now she misses him. The pasuk continues a couple of psukim later. Her enemies have become the head. It means that anybody who harasses the Jewish people becomes a head, becomes a leader. A lot of different reasons are given for that. We had that recently in En Yaakov and Gittin as well. There's a lot of reasons. One reason is this way: it's more of an honor for the Jewish people. It shouldn't be that they were conquered and dominated by a lowly nation. It's because that nation causes the Jewish people to do tshuva, and therefore they get a certain schar in this world for that. And there's many other reasons given why it is. Marsha points out also another point is the Jewish people are the highest of all nations, so therefore it needs to be that the nation that conquers and dominates them also has to be the highest and most powerful of nations. And there's many other reasons given for that point. Shenema, as we find in the pasuk, kiloi muaflasha musakla. There's no tiredness for the one who's harassing her. This is talking about Sancheiriv. Agoisagra actually takes out the word shenema because it's a different drusha according to him. Anyway, kais harishon. Now at the beginning, heikol, he went easier. Outs of Zvulun va'outs of Naphtali, on the land of Zvulun and the land of Naphtali, meaning those are the first places that Sancheiriv conquered and exiled the people. Va'achron hichbid, and then at the end, it was much harsher and like sweeping them away. Derech hayom, the way of the sea, the shvatim who live near the sea. Eber hayarden, the ones who live in Eber hayarden. Glil hagoyim, and the ones who live in the area of the goyim. So what does that mean? Kibay muaflasha muzakla amar rava amar abiyichnan. It means shakolam meitzik liyisrael ain it oyif. Anybody who harasses the Jewish people is never tired. They constantly feel the strength to do it over and over again. Earlier, by the way, we had on Tzadik Dalet, the Gemara Darshan in this pasuk, to say that those Shvatim, Zvulun, Naphtali, and the rest of them had slacked off on learning Torah. Ka'is HaRishon Heikal, they were light, they didn't consider Torah something important, therefore they were taken into Golos as opposed to Chizkiah and his people, who were putting tremendous effort into learning Torah. So Hashem saved them from Sancheiriv. But here the Gemara is not Darshaning the rest of the pasuk, we're just saying, we're focusing on the words Kilei Muaflasha Mutzakla, the one who harasses the Jewish people, never feels tired, and they never get worn out from it. Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's true.
Unfortunately, so almost call them yeah. All right. Continuing with the psukim in Eicha, the pasuk says, "Loy aleichem kol over derech." It should not be to you who passed by on the road. What does that mean? Omer Rava, Omer Rav Yechonon, mikan the kuvlana min haTorah. From here, we see in the Torah a source for the concept of kuvlana. Rashi gives a couple of explanations. First of all, it means when a person is talking about his troubles, he should say like loy alecha or something to that effect. It shouldn't come on you. So that's not considered nichush. It's not considered like a superstitious thing to do because we have a source for it here in the pasuk. So the Navi is saying, I'm describing the catastrophe that happened to Yerushalayim and all the terrible things that happened. It shouldn't come to you who are listening to it. Rashi's second explanation of kuvlana means when a person has a tzara, he should tell other people about it. Kuvlana means to cry out. A person shouldn't just bottle it up. He should go and cry out about it as we're doing in Megillas Eicha. The third explanation Rashi says is that it means now you're saying the word kovel also means opposite. So you say to another person, I'm not saying about you. So it's somewhat similar to the first one, but in other words, when we're talking about all these disasters and everything, I'm not saying that it should happen to you. I'm saying about my own troubles. So either way, we learn that from this pasuk. The Torah says, "Kol Ovrei Dorech." It says all those who go by on the road. So why the Loshon Ovrei who go by Meloshon Avera? So Amram, Asuuni ka Ovrei Adas. The based in Shamayla treated me as if we had violated the natural laws also, meaning it was not just the laws of the Torah, but even as if we were completely uncivilized. The Ilu was Sedoim Ksev, and you find by Sedoim, Hashem himter al Sedoim, Hashem rained down fire on Sedoim. By Yerushalayim, it says Hashem sent down a fire into my bones and he broke them. So in other words, we see that the punishment for that the so we see in other words that we were treated as if we were like Shadoim. They were punished by fire in Hashemayim, and so were we. They were completely uncivilized, as we're going to learn later on in the parak. We're going to learn in a few days that it's Hashem about the laws, about the corrupt laws that they had. So now I was being treated in the same way. So the Gemara says, Uchtiv, but then later on in the Gos Eicha, it says, Vayigdal avoyim basami mechafas Sodoim. The Averus of my people were worse than the people of Sodoim. So then we have to ask, Vakimase ponim yesh bedover, is there favoritism over here? Sodoim was completely destroyed. So why weren't they overturned like Sodoim? Fine, they had the same punishment of fire coming down from Shemayim, but with Sodoim was completely overturned. If you're telling me that the Jewish people acted worse than Sodoim, then why were they not also overturned? Marshall also points out another point as well is that by Sodoim you say Vahashem, meaning that it was one of the Mephoshim says that by Sodoim it says Vahashem Himtir, which means Hashem and his Beis Din, like so to speak, Hashem didn't just do it himself, he so to speak delegated it to the Beis Din Shomayla, as opposed to here we're saying Mimorim Sholach, that Hashem sent it himself. Or actually the other way around, Hashem Himtir means Hashem directly caused it to rain down. Sholach means that Hashem did it through a shliach. So the question is why? Do the Jewish people deserve less punishment if they were worse than Sodoim? And the answer is, Amar Rava, Amar Rav Yechon, Midi Yisera Hoisi B'Yerushalayim, Shalai Hoisi B'Sodoim. Because after all, Yerushalayim did have one thing better in which they were not like Sodoim. Dila B'Sodoim Ksiv, Hine Zehoya Avon Sodoim Achoisef, the Novi Yechezkel described, you know what was the Aveda of your sister, your fellow city of Sodoim, Goin, they were proud, Sivas Lochem, they were satisfied with food, V'Yad Oni V'Evyan Lo Yechzika, and therefore they didn't support the poor and the needy, and they, as we know, they wouldn't allow poor people in their town, etc. So they were stingy. By Yerushalayim it says Yidei Nashim Rachmonius Vishlu Yaldehem. The hands of the Rachmoniusdicker women cooked their children, which means Rashi says first of all it means they had Rachmonus as opposed to in Sodoim they had no Rachmonus. So that helped for Yerushalayim that at least it wasn't overturned. Rashi's second explanation is in this that in Yerushalayim, even when they're reduced to this, they're eating their own children, they're sharing it with one another. Hayu Lavores Lomai. The pasuk says they were food for them. By Sodoim, you have nobody. Nobody was poor at all, and nobody has rachmanus on poor people at all. Whereas in Yerushalayim, at least they had that degree of rachmanus. So because of that, it's not masay ponim, it's not favoritism for Yerushalayim to not be completely destroyed, and for Hashem to send the destruction through a shliach, because they did have that midah of rachmanus, and which is one of the natural midahs for the Jewish people, and that's what saved them from completely being destroyed. We'll continue tomorrow about Hashem with.